This episode is sponsored by New Balance, and this has been a really easy one because their Run Your Way campaign is everything that we stand for at the Running Channel. So if you're lacing up, getting out the door, regardless of whatever your reason is, your pace, how far you're going, your age, all of those things, it doesn't matter. You're a runner.
Yes, and we got to celebrate some incredible runners recently attending New Balance's community workshops and seeing them all again at the 2024 TCS London Marathon. And they were all running for such different reasons. Some were going for PBs, some ran the marathon for the first time, others were doing their first marathon after having children or running in memory of a loved one, and others were just trying to raise money for a charity too.
Yeah, everyone did have their own reason, which was amazing. And both New Balance and the Running Channel got to celebrate all of those amazing runners, their training journeys and everything that brought them to that moment, and seeing them all stand on the start line to take on the marathon, all running their way with their own reason, was incredible. So if you're feeling inspired and want to check out New Balance's running range, then check out the link in the show notes.
You are listening to the Running Channel podcast with me, Sarah Hartley, my co-host Andy Baddeley, who still hasn't got 5,000 Instagram followers, and Rich, who is about to try and cycle for a very long time.
Yeah, and you know what? My bum hurts already.
Should we have got you standing for this record?
Yeah, yeah. I'm about to take on a challenge where I cycle from the very tip of North Wales to the very tip of South Wales over a course of 4 days, taking in 85 miles per day. What am I thinking? Well, my message is stick to running.
Well, stick to running, but I mean, how much training? You've done a lot of training for this, right? Because that's quite a lot of cycling to undertake in one go.
Should we start the podcast?
You've done no training whatsoever. And until about 4 days ago, you didn't even know that you could buy specific bike shorts, right?
No, but you helped me, and now I've got the chamois cream.
You know, it's chamois cream.
What is it?
Chamois.
Is it not called chamois?
No, it's chamois cream.
The word is chamois, it's just pronounced chamois.
Oh, right, all right, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, this is going to go well.
Okay, so we got caught up in the pronunciation of cycling-related terms there, but today we're going to be talking about, can you be good at every distance? Which is a question that we've been asked a few times by lots of different people when we've been out on runs or at podcast at therunningchannel.com. But before we do that, how's your running been this week, Sarah?
Actually really good. Very hot. Very, very warm.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You love the heat, right?
I hate the heat. I hate it.
It is so different because we don't really get these long spells of heat in the UK.
It's literally like I went on a run this morning, right? I am in short shorts because apparently that's the new thing. I'm in a t-shirt. I am
dripping,
sweating.
You're still sweating now, a little bit.
You just make her nervous.
This is
mate.
An audio version, so we're fine. I am running past people in two jumpers. I'm running past people in coats. I'm running past the UK weather is just so unpredictable.
What are you saying? People don't dress for the weather?
But they weren't running,
as in winter ended yesterday, and then today, suddenly we have to have all of our summer wardrobes. I only check the weather because I'm running.
I know what you mean. When I see people at the train station in the morning and they've got a long jacket on and kind of thick trousers, I'm thinking, did you not check your weather app?
Yeah, you can
tell.
It's
the first thing I do in the morning, check the weather app.
I feel like it's so 50-50 though. I'm like, well, yesterday it was warm, so today it will be warm.
So you want to see
is that how the weather works?
Yeah, pretty one, definitely not in the UK. No. And also, I think for anyone who's not in the UK right now, we should probably say that warm's not actually that warm, is it?
It's embarrassing. Compared to like in Australia when people are waking up at 3 a.m. to go for a run to escape, they're like 30, 40 degrees.
And you're like, oh my goodness, it's 18 degrees.
It was 12 degrees.
Yeah, but British people party when the weather gets nice like this. We just love it. Yeah. We just get outside.
There is a person on TikTok who did an incredible video of what happens to the UK when it's warm. And it's literally just like 90 seconds of sketches being like, Pims, does anyone want Pims? Should we go to the beach? Should I get my hat? Should we go out? And it's
so true.
It's so true.
So true.
Like barbecue sales on the rise.
Oh, yeah, that and any piece of greens, particularly in London, any piece of green space.
Yeah.
And it's not even 20 degrees. So
it's
if you stand up.
Can you see the sun? Yeah. Should we have a picnic?
Yeah. and it's full. But also, if you stand up from that spot of grass, you get hit by quite a chill wind because it's not actually that hot. But there'll be people in bikinis on or like in shorts with their shirts off. Sunbathing in the middle of the day.
Isn't it great? I love this weather.
I love it.
It's
apart
fantastic.
From for running.
No, it's awful for
How's
running.
How's your week of running been, Rick?
It's been quite intense. So we've been doing this challenge, which we touched on in last week's pod, about trying to work out negative splits and do 5K of negative splits without looking at your watch on every kilometre. It's extremely tricky because it's hard enough if you've got a watch to work out your do negative splits.
Yeah.
If you haven't
like the Holy
got
Grail,
a watch, it's incredibly difficult. But then you've got the weather as well.
Yeah.
So you're getting faster and faster while it's getting hotter and hotter. So my little trick for this was actually I got up very early when the first child woke and the first cuckoo cried.
What time
I headed
is that?
Out the door about 5:33 to do the challenge. And I won't tell you how it went, but I would say it's
tough.
It's tough to do it without any form of discipline of a watch.
Yeah, it makes you realise how impressive elites are when they can, because you used to be able to just run around a track, bang on to the second, get it right.
Yeah, when I was in good shape, yeah, that was like my coach would sometimes take my watch off me and he'd be like, go and run a 60 second 400 and I could do it.
It's really hard.
I definitely can't do that anymore. Either run a 60 second 400 or do it without looking at my watch.
Maybe we should do a video
he puts himself down too much nowadays.
No, don't worry, Andy, we'll take you to the track and we'll go test it.
Yeah.
We'll just, me and Rick, will sit on the sidelines with an ice cream.
Exactly.
And we'll just be like, right, 60 seconds, go.
Exactly. I think that'd be, I'm quite up for seeing if I can still do it.
I'd watch. Well, yeah, but you... You did so well on Heart Attack Hill.
Until you do.
When you did Heart Attack Hill.
Heartbreak Hill, yeah. You say I'd put myself down, mainly just to join in, because that's all that happens on the podcast,
right? I suppose,
putting me down, so I'm like, let's get involved.
But we saw how fast he was.
Oh, don't act the victim. You give as good as you get.
Well.
That's true. Yeah, he rarely acts the victim.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
I'm
Are you all right?
You're all right.
Do you want us to not bully you for this episode?
We got to episode 20.
Yeah.
I was started playing
the victim.
I'm not playing the victim. I'm still shell-shocked from having seen a particular video of Sarah Hartley, age 12, where she was incredible. First ever video where she's on screen talking about running in a very Running Channel presentery way, actually, but also with a wonderful haircut.
Right, this is exactly what I'm talking about, Andy.
What? Me giving as good as I get?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've just got to have these things up my sleeve.
Look, we all have mistakes from when we're 12. Unfortunately, I'm young enough that cameras existed.
Oh, there we go. See, that's
12.
A little dig.
Oh, yeah. That's playing victim, I'd say. Yeah. Hang on. You knew you were going to be a Running Channel presenter when you were 12.
No.
The Running Channel didn't exist when you were 12.
Did YouTube exist?
No.
Yeah, it's 2009, wasn't it?
What, YouTube starting?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I should look that one up.
I think it was around then. Yeah, it did exist when I was younger. But luckily, this is not on YouTube. It's on my friend's very, very privated Facebook account. If you might have heard of Duke of Edinburgh's award.
Yes.
This is Arts Award, which is very similar, but it's the creative version of it. So you have to make videos and then you can get like badges and kind of move up bronze, silver, gold. And for the first version of it, I think we made a music video, which will never see the light of day. It was Carly Rae Jepsen's Call Me Maybe, just to put everyone back into that time zone.
Okay.
And I went to an all-girls school, so I played the
you
man.
You can tell.
Yeah. And then the following year, we leveled it up, I think, or it might have been, maybe it wasn't for Arts World, I can't remember. But we basically made a video called Science in Sport, not anything to do with the brand, but it was, maybe it was called Science in Action. It was basically going through all of the things in sport that science has backing behind, because we were very young and it was just broad science. So
I love it. I think that the public would love to see this. If you'd like to see it, email into podcast@therunningchannel.com. Enough people ask, then we'll probably try to make it happen.
We'll do a public viewing. We'll do a premiere. Cinema.
Yeah, I think I'm busy that day.
Okay,
should we move on to the topic?
Yeah,
so this topic stemmed from, I had a really good conversation with someone at a run club a few weeks ago, and I was talking about my current goal, which I haven't really said out loud yet, but currently what I'm working on with my coach is a sub 20-minute 5K.
Ooh,
very scary. I do have a race booked in. I'm not sure I'm going to hit it in that race, but that's fine because I'm trying to knock a minute off.
That is fast.
It's terrifying. But I was talking to another person at this run club and was saying that's my goal, and she went, oh, I'm exactly the same, that's like my long-term goal that I'm working towards. And then she was like, I can't seem to get that one, I've got a Boston qualifier, but I just can't seem to get this. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm now terrified, because my marathon time is 3:49, but actually I've seen quite a lot of people who will have their full broad range of times in their Instagram bio or on Strava, Garmin, wherever it is, and there is actually some people who really excel towards the longer distances. And I say longer, obviously there is 100, 200 like shorter track distances as well. But even between 5K and a marathon, you can be stronger towards either one. So it might not necessarily be that you start at 5K and then build your way all the way up.
Yeah, so I mean, depending on what you're training for and what your background is, like if you haven't done the endurance to run a good marathon, then you could run a great 5K or 10K and be, relative to those times, much slower at the marathon, or maybe not even able to complete the distance. So yeah, and that's what position I'm in right now. Like, I'm not saying I run a great 5K, but I can run a fast 5K relatively. And I don't think I would even finish a marathon right now. Or if I did, the time that I run wouldn't compare favorably to that 5K. So it depends on the training that you do. But we always worked on the premise that if you're fit, you're fit. So, but that usually translated to kind of either side of the distance that you're training for. Mm-hmm. So if you've done a big block training for 10K, then you should probably be able to run a good half marathon and a good 5K. But that might not stretch as far as a good marathon. And similarly, it's not going to help you run a good 800 meters or mile time.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, you'd have to start doing back-to-back training blocks to be specific at different distances. And then that shifts your focus. It shifts your aerobic, anaerobic balance in training. And then means that in order to be really good at the marathon, to run your best possible time, you're going to have to sacrifice a little bit over the 5K because that's a bit further away in terms of speed. You still need to touch on that speed, but it's less relevant. And then similarly, you want to run a really, really fast 5K, you're going to have to sacrifice the marathon.
I think as well, like the harder, the closer you are to your like overall in life red line, the longer you have to put those sacrifices in. So like if you've been running for like 4 or 5 years, that might not actually have been long enough to sacrifice at both ends to get those two times that are like comparable to each other. But I'm interested to know, out of the three of us, what would you say is your preferred distance, and does that correlate to the distance that you think is your like best, closest to your red line time? Obviously, Andy, I'm guessing you like shorter distances. I don't know why.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it? I would always have run as short as possible. So like if I had been able to be a 100 meter runner, then I would have happily had that as my career, but I wasn't fast enough. And then as a kid, you end up stepping up through. So I did do the 100, 4x1 relay and stuff like that. I did the long jump, which is a sprinter's event. And then I did the 800 and found cross country running and stuff like that. And then just had to keep stepping up through the distances because I wasn't quite fast enough at those shorter distances. And then I found the 1500 meters, which was my sweet spot. So running for 3.5 minutes sub 4 minute modes for a mile. That was like this magical thing for me, having grown up in that era of Cram and Yvette in the UK. So yeah, those are obviously my favorite distances, but then same logic. If I was running 1500 meters, then I needed to be in good 5K shape and good 800 meter shape. I know that's not necessarily super relatable to everyone out there because I've been running on the track. But yeah, I still prefer the shorter stuff. If I could just train doing intervals all the time, I love that. The longer stuff I find less exciting, but I know I'm going to have to do loads of it for this pending marathon.
Is that what scares you about a marathon?
The long stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just my body letting me do it. Like, I suppose it's my body's taking a beating from doing the faster, harder stuff. But then that means that now when I try to run more slowly and for longer times, that's when I get sore. But if I run a hard 5 or 10K now, I don't tend to get sore from it in the same way with my knee bothering me.
Interesting. Brick?
I think I would be red line wise. I think I'm probably better suited to actually running longer distances, so more like 10K. But actually, when it comes to speed work, I'd definitely say 5K. But my situation has definitely changed post-injury. So a bit like Andy was talking about how what his body lets him do. Post-injury, it's all about building it up slowly. So my aim at the moment is to get back to that 10K time by, say, September time. But no way would I just jump right now from going 5 to 10 Ks instantly in kind of race pace. There's absolutely no, I would have to build that up to feel comfortable again at that distance.
And you, Sarah?
I see. This is what I keep wrestling with.
You've asked the question and don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer. At the moment, my training is 5K related, which I think is my weakest one. I think what I'm strongest at is probably half marathon. Because it, even though that's the one that I've done the least, so I don't know whether that's what I would say is the strongest, but I think it's the 5K, 10K. It's too short and too hard is what I find. Like I find the like mental battle of, I know I can go faster, but I don't quite understand the like pain cave that you have to be in.
But your muscle memory, Sarah, is in a good shape at the moment for those longer distances because you've done so many of them in a relatively short space of time.
So I think that's
despite, though, I think some of the medical evidence suggesting actually your body should only run one marathon in a year, is it, Andy?
People used to play it much safer, but now with the shoes, I don't know quite what the risk factors are as to whether you can do more.
If it's elasticated,
people do run a lot more now.
Yeah.
A lot more easy to recover.
Yeah.
With the new shoes.
I definitely think, though, because I've run longer distances, that's why, like, for me now, if you ask me to race anything, I'd be like, give me a half marathon. Because it's long enough that you can, like, recover within it.
Get into it. Yeah.
And then but it's also not as long as a marathon in that, like, I really struggle with that last 12K of a marathon. I know everyone does. But then I also really struggle with the first 3K of a 5K. So I think that's why I like a half marathon, because the 5K isn't that, the first 5K and a half isn't that stressful.
Well, I think you've maybe hit the nail on the head there. The first part of a 5K and then the last part of a marathon, like, it's just a fundamentally different mindset. So the question was, can you be good at every distance? Probably not at the same time. So actually at the end of a marathon, after a marathon training block, you'd have an amazing aerobic base to then go and run a good 5 or 10K if you throw in some specific additional training.
Yeah.
But mindset-wise, the 5K, you have to hurt yourself from the beginning. You have to, like, put yourself in a little bit of discomfort even in that first couple of K. We've got a video about it where I actually ran a 20-minute 5K trying to talk about running a 20-minute 5K as I was doing it. And that's what I was trying to do. So check out that video actually about the mindset of the first couple of K. You're almost trying to do a bit of a mindfulness exercise. You don't want to think about the fact you've got 5K to go still. You should be bringing yourself back to, like, form cues or just, like, relaxation rather than thinking, oh my goodness, I've got 4 more K at this level of discomfort.
Yeah.
Whereas in the marathon, obviously I don't know for sure, that first part, the 10K, should be relatively comfortable. You're mentally preparing yourself for, like, the end of it. Mm. Yeah. Whereas in the 5K, you've got to force yourself to dig a bit deeper than you want to in the first 10 minutes.
I think it's like the shorter the race, for me, it feels like the closer you have to be to perfection, like the less room there is for error. So like in the first 5K of a marathon, if I'm not quite on pace of where I want to be, that doesn't panic me as much as if I check my watch 1K into a 5K and it's not what I wanted.
Yeah. Because
I think that's when your mind then spirals and you're like, oh, I don't know how to recover this.
Yeah, well, look, exactly. That's what I got nervous about on the track, running for 3.5 minutes. Like, there's very little room for error. So if I miss the break, you know, when someone goes hard and then they get a 5 meter gap on me, then I have to be 5 meters faster than them in the next 700 meters in that race to catch it up. And that's quite a lot. Whereas in the marathon, if you're 10 seconds too fast or too slow at one point, like, you can easily make that up or lose it potentially.
But I suppose that's at the elite level, not a kind of amateur running level, which is a different mindset, isn't it?
Yeah,
but then it's just about, for amateur level, you just be, well, shorter races, sooner you finish, the quicker you get out of pain.
Yeah, but then you need to be able to put yourself, if you want to, that's the point, I suppose. If someone truly wants to find their max over 5K, it's totally different to trying to find their max over a half marathon or marathon, because they have to be willing to run at their red line for that real period of discomfort and then to keep pushing. And in the 5K, you have to keep pushing almost every kilometer just to maintain that pace that you've set. So your rate of perceived exertion, how hard it feels, just gets harder and harder and harder.
That's why I think actually one thing that I've seen happen over a few races recently that I think is a huge game changer, if you can find it. Obviously, this is dependent on who around you is racing.
Yeah.
But I know Mo used this. One of his pacers said to him during his 3-hour marathon attempt, like, don't look at your watch. Let's forget about pacing. Yeah. Spot that guy or girl like 20 meters ahead. Keep them in sight and let's see how much closer we can get to them.
Yeah.
And then, so if you turn it, because what I would say is the plus side of elite racing is that it's not, you're not entering that race necessarily to run a time. You're entering that race to be competitive, which often then equates to you will push yourself right to your max.
Yeah.
Because there is that element of the, like, unknown of, like, oh, well, I just want to overtake that person.
Yeah, you either want to give yourself an opportunity to win or you don't.
Yeah.
And so you make that call in your mind is like, well, this is my chance to win. And the time is irrelevant, even if it's faster than you've ever run before in your life, because you either win or you don't.
Yeah. So in the, like, actually, if you can then translate that into, if you position yourself right in a 5K race, for example, and then you get to kilometer 3 and your mind is spiraling with the times and the what you need to run, actually, see if you can spot someone near you who looks like they know what they're doing and they're going to pace the rest of the run, right? I would say definitely don't do this in the first kilometer, because the chances of getting behind someone who goes up way too fast are too high.
Yeah.
But if you can towards the end of the race start to like either pick people off or just stick with someone, that actually might make more of a difference if the time's stressing you out.
Which actually reminds me of mantras, and people keep asking us about mantras, like in whatever level or distance of race that people are running. And I realized that my two mantras are completely contradictory.
What are they?
No surprise to me.
Completely like that, and I say them the whole way through.
Wait, what do you say?
Go on, hit them with us.
Slow and steady finishes the race. Faster you go, the quicker you finish.
That's amazing.
Do you just on the start line just pick the whole one way of the through. Two?
Yeah, no, they change throughout.
Oh. In one, that's brilliant. And that's it. Anyone listening, that is a direct insight into Rick's mind.
Have you got like a goldfish brain where like you forget what you said a minute ago?
Yeah.
So like for 2 minutes, you're really brilliant.
It's just packed full of sponge.
Wonderful. Well, I would leave people with my mantra, which is based on opportunity. I kind of mentioned it just then, is that certainly in the shorter distances, but I think it applies to longer ones too. If you're in a little bit of discomfort or you see someone in front of you, like Sarah mentioned there, that you might want to latch onto to help you to run the fastest you've ever run before, you're trying to run a PB, then choose to see that discomfort as your opportunity. So embrace the discomfort as an opportunity to do something you've never done before, rather than something where you also have the chance to kind of choose not to do it. So switch that switch in your brain to saying, this is my opportunity, my chance to run faster.
You are listening to the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got your questions to answer. Plus, we've each picked a new story from the world of running to discuss. This episode is sponsored by New Balance and their Run Your Way campaign. Now, me and Andy and Rick have been going along to some of New Balance's community workshops in the lead up to the 2024 TCS London Marathon, and it has genuinely been the highlight of my week.
You were really struggling with your mojo before one particular run club. So you'd missed a workout, you'd had to abandon it because you just weren't feeling it, you were too tired, you weren't motivated.
Yeah, all right. It was a bad week. I get it. But yeah, it was in Dublin. It was on a Thursday night. I had only done one run before that, and I knew I had two pretty big runs to do at the weekend, and it was exactly what I needed. Partying around the streets, dancing to music at the traffic lights. I just kept turning to people and going, is this what every run club's like?
Yeah, people from different walks of life, people all running for their own reason, essentially running their way
and not being too hard on themselves about their pace or the way that they run.
And that's what the Run Your Way campaign from New Balance is all about, supporting those people, celebrating all of their different reasons for running. So if you'd like to find out more about New Balance's running range to help you through all your running training, then check out the link in the show notes. Almost question time, so stay tuned for that. But first, every episode we pick a news story from the world of running to chat about. So we're going to go to Sarah in a minute, but I just want to say something that made me feel all warm inside, actually. Rick just used the expression, that really warmed my cockles, when we finished a previous segment of the podcast. So I just want to try and, I'm going to try and use that in my everyday life now.
Well, just to confirm, that wasn't the content, that was the fact that me and Andy didn't run over time wise.
Oh, yes, sorry. He was very pleased with us.
You two just really warm my cockles when you just hit things on the on
when
nail on the head.
When we see a little hand action.
See the hand action, and I say, right, you've hit the times here. Shut up.
Yeah,
get
so
on
for,
with it.
For additional context, because no one finds out about this, Rick waves his arms around and with very clear signals to us when we need to wrap up.
It's like I'm churning milk.
Yes, he does. He does it.
We used to have two
action.
Hand signals, but Andy couldn't cope with that. So we're just back down to one.
He was too confused. It was too confusing. But yes, when he wants to wrap us up because he's lazy and doesn't want to have to chop us down in the edit afterwards, then that's what he does.
Absolutely not. Leave them wanting more.
Excellent. Okay, so Sarah, what news story have you got for us?
So this is kind of news, but it's also a question. So Mo Farah, incredible athlete.
Yeah.
He is coming to the end of his career. This is his kind of retirement run of races. He's done London Marathon. Then a few weeks ago, he's done Manchester 10K. Yeah. And that leaves him with Great North Run. And then
in retirement.
He is retired. He said that he's going to come back and do a few races. But this, seeing someone kind of bow out of professional sport through different races, I just had a question for you, really, in that from your experience, how hard is it to stop running as an elite? Because like obviously most jobs you just go like, right, I've hit a certain age, I'm gonna,
well, that's kind of what I did.
But you know what I mean, like you go to your boss and you say you want to retire, and then you put in a retirement plan. How hard is it to retire as a professional athlete, and is there because this seems like quite a sensible way of doing it. Like people know he's going out
advance,
this year. It's in advance. Like psychologically, how hard is it to retire, and have people got it like right and wrong? Like is it hard to do?
It's really hard. It's the single hardest thing I've had to do probably. And it was
not a, I didn't feel like I was Mo Farah, so I didn't feel like it was something that I would announce to the world or that anyone would care. So I broadly just stopped and didn't tell anyone other than the people close to me. I was like, well, I'm done and I'm just not going to do this anymore. So that's how it happened for me, and it happened through injury and then having children and not being willing to be as selfish as I needed to be to compete at the level that I knew I wanted to compete at. I'd had the surgery in my knee as well, and I just didn't feel quite as good as I knew I could have been, or I don't know what strange use of tense is there, but I didn't think I could get back to where I was before. So then to spend time away from two young kids and like, you know, my wife who'd supported me through that whole period, I was a bit like, I don't want to do this anymore. So then I just stopped. I spoke to my coach about it first, obviously. And then I just decided that was me. That was me done. And I did get it, just, I got enough closure in my final season because I'd had this 3 years of injury where I'd hardly run at all post 2012. Came back to try and run 2016 to try and run the Rio Olympics. Didn't quite make it, but I did have two races that in hindsight were enough for me to then switch off and be like, I've had a good go at this. I'm not going to do any better than that. And that was actually in the space of 3 or 4 days. I'd had a rubbish year 2016 because I was desperate to qualify for the Olympics, and it became apparent quite early that I just wasn't good enough anymore, or wasn't quite at that level. And then I ran at Iffley Road, so the home of Bannister's famous 4 minute mile back in 1954. And I ran exactly the same time as him. So I ran 359.4.
Nice.
So I ran under 4 minutes, which I had been nowhere near doing that year.
Yeah.
And I ran it at Iffley Road on a beautiful summer's day. My coach was there with his son. And it was a relatively low level. It was a high level meet in terms of the people that were there, but it wasn't like an international. There was no one in the stands or anything like that. It was just people's friends and family. And that felt really cool. And then 3 or 4 days later, I ran a 3K and I ran under 8 minutes, which was always a big target. And then after that, I ran one or two more races, but could see I didn't have it anymore, and then kind of went quietly off into the sunset.
That must have been hard, that the feeling when you thought that you didn't have it.
Yeah, and it took me a long time. When I stopped, I didn't run really for a year at all because I didn't really want to do it. I'd done this thing that I'd been good at as a youngster, and then when you're good at something, it's fun. Like that kind of, those two things go in hand, and then it's fun, so you become even better at it. And then it becomes your job where it's like you've got to do it every day and you have to get up and run 12 times a week and do 3 gym sessions and go to the physio and then do all the rehab and the stretching, and you can never switch off. So then when I stopped, this amazing weight was lifted from my shoulders where I didn't have to do it. So I just decided not to do it until I kind of wanted to again a year later and sort of started getting back into it again.
I was just really nicely listening. Is it ever something you thought about in your career? Did you ever think of a retirement plan? Or was it literally just keep setting goals until you can't?
No, I think probably my only retirement plan would have been this assumption, this ego that like I was going to achieve enough that I would then get to announce my retirement in some way. Like Mo obviously merits the idea of people caring when he retires, but I just didn't feel like that was the case for me. I'd sort of been off the scene for a few years, and people forget in athletics so quickly, or in elite sport in general. The Olympic finalist 2008, nearly Olympic finalist in 2012, and running at a really high level, but then you really quickly get dropped from lottery funding and sponsorship and whatever else it might be. And then you're just not racing, so no one cares. And no one from British athletics ever reached out to me to find out like what I was doing or anything like that. So you go from being at the Olympics to literally no contact with anyone other than the people in your close circle.
Because people hammer, you know, young footballers and football in general for not supporting players when they get dropped from clubs when they're 19, 20.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, in other sports, it's kind of just as bad in most of them for support.
Yeah, so I don't know. There's a lot more awareness of mental health and transitioning athletes into kind of future sport. I was lucky that I had the help of the Dame Kelly Holmes Trust, actually. So they helped with a kind of course that helped me as I was injured and so on. I started to think about retiring, and I never thought I'd be doing the Running Channel. So that's something, but that did directly come out of that course, really. They encouraged you to think about how you could build something around your skills. Like I would say that the skills that I had were a work ethic for a start. Like you obviously worked really hard and you were used to putting a shift in. But then coordinating like a bunch of people around me that were my team as an athlete, and hopefully motivating them in different ways and working with lots of different personalities. So then I used that to then, with what we're doing, what I ended up doing basically after that.
And that's what he does now, Sarah. He coordinates us with a bunch of emails along the lines of, Rick, whatever you do, don't come to work today in leggings, please.
That is true.
Yep. And Sarah, please get out a video of you 12 years old.
12 years old, yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll all watch it.
Yeah, that's what it all came from. So thanks very much to them. So yeah, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to transition. And like, I think Mo, having competed at that super high level, will find it difficult. And that's why Dame Kelly Holmes set up her trust, because she was an Olympic double medalist and then stopped running. And then what did she do? And I think she struggled with that. So I'm wishing him lots of luck, I guess.
Thank you for sharing. That was really, really interesting. Up next, we've got your questions.
Well, my cockles are well and truly cold now, you two, because Andy took absolutely ages to get through that segment.
Hey, that was a good bit of
news. It was good. It was fascinating, which is why I didn't wind him up.
You made the mistake of asking me about myself.
Yeah. let's not do that next week, yeah. Shall we?
Right.
So let's talk about Phil's question. But first, let's thank Phil, because Phil tells us where he's from.
Hey, yes, where's Phil from?
He's from Misterton. I don't know where
he
that
didn't
is.
Give you any pronunciation guide though, did he?
Misterton.
Yeah.
Well, that's
sure it's
rolls
I've never
definitely
heard
sounds
of
like
that
nice. In the UK.
Yeah, Misterton. Loving the podcast, he says. My question is about pacing. Everybody says start slow. However, I'm more comfortable starting fast. I love this. I recently PB'd my 5K at 19:19. Wow. Oh,
top effort.
My first split was 3:41, then 3:55 for the remainder. This pattern continues in all distances. My first split is always quicker. Should I concentrate on reversing this or carry on as I am? I'm just laughing because this is everything we ever tell everybody not to do.
Yeah.
Phil is basically has just ignored us for the last few years.
Yeah, he's and now he wants us to validate it and say, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Which
yeah,
actually
yeah.
I might be about to do.
Really?
Yeah. Some controversy here. So
Andy, don't you sign off our scripts?
Yes, exactly. But there's something about the first, say, 20, 30 seconds of an effort that from an energy expenditure percentage make very little difference. There's a difference here between going a little bit too fast in the very first K of a 5K, where most of that time you've gained probably in the first 1 or 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
versus someone going crazy fast for the first 2 or 3 miles of a marathon. Like, I think there's a big difference there. So mm-hmm. like if you just get off the line and you, and I'm biased here because this is how I would somehow approach my training sessions, and it drove some of my training partners mad. They would like to get off the line in a rep, an interval where we're supposed to run a specific time, and gradually build up to the pace and then run that pace, or even go straight off the line at that pace. Whereas what I always ended up doing, possibly through slight lack of pace judgment, was for the first 30 seconds or so, first 200 meters, I would always be slightly too fast, and then I would kind of back down
right.
onto the pace that I wanted.
And that was
to.
Your tactic?
Yeah. And it was how I felt comfortable running. And because you do have that extra adrenaline at the beginning, in the shorter distances, I think like 5K, I don't think that what he's saying there is an awful idea.
I would say that Phil is obviously very fit.
Yes.
If he's running those kind of times.
This and is I think what I was going to say.
This works if you are doing all your training and you are in good shape and you're probably doing some strength work and your body can hold yourself together. If
yeah.
you are able to run a first split at 3:41 and then go to 3:55, if your body can hold that up, I would say yes. I would say for the vast majority of people, this is a bad idea.
Yeah, I would say... Yeah. My advice would be is if you're really dialed into pacing, you've yeah. spent like a long time training and you prefer doing that, then it's that's not a terrible idea. But I have, there is video evidence of me doing this
yes.
and it goes very wrong. But I think that if you don't have an understanding of pacing
yeah.
and if you're not like really dialed into where your red line is and what's going to be too fast, then it's much safer to go off conservatively and then make your last kilometer your fastest.
100%. Sarah's hit the nail on the head. Phil sounds pretty experienced, to be fair. If he has that knowledge to be like, well, and then I held 3:55 for the remaining 4K. If you know that you can do that because you're dialed into it, then I don't think that's a bad tactic. But yes, Sarah, that's what we've almost worked on, isn't it? Like your propensity to go too fast in the first K has then cost you so much time towards the end of it that you haven't got that experience to kind of hold on to that pace.
Yeah, so much so that for my 5K race that I'm currently preparing for, I'm literally planning on going out by myself and just spending 10 minutes like on a non-running day yeah. where I start my watch and try to hit 4 minute K pace within 10
perfect.
Seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I know that I don't have, I think if you're, what I would actually want to know from Phil is that if he would be happy to do this, I would love to know if he took that PB pace and started off dead on that pace and then tried to negative split it,
could he go faster?
Because that's the other thing, like, if you make that first K your hardest, then you're clinging on in that last K.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, the suggestion is though that he probably couldn't because he's going all out.
But psychologically, you're not gonna hit your red line in that first K regardless.
I see what you mean.
So like if you then reverse it in that last K, could that actually have been a 3:39 rather than a 3:41?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like Phil, write to us again and let us know.
Let's do challenge Phil.
Yeah, let's see how he goes. But it's interesting, I think, anyway, in the 800 meters, for example, to take it to an extreme at the Olympics or the World Championships, so really highest level, their first lap is all, unless it's tactical, the way that people run a world record or the fact is they just start as hard as they can broadly in a controlled way and they get slower every 200 meters.
Interesting.
So actually the last 200 meters in the 800 meters at the Olympics, men's and women's, I think, is the slowest last 200 meters of any distance race. So the last 200 meters in the 1500, 5K, 10K are all faster because of the energy systems at play. And so I've gone off on a massive aside here, but it can work.
Interesting.
Let us know.
Email in podcast@therunningchannel.com. Do you negative split or positive split? And are you willing to try the other way around? Let us know.
Yeah,
email in if you try it.
Be flexible. So you've been listening to the Running Channel podcast. Could you do us a small favour and leave us a review and rate the podcast if you like it? Sarah's less kind of equivocal about it. She's like, yes, you must do this.
Unless you don't like it, in which case, review someone else.
Nice. Okay, well, thanks. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode was brought to you by New Balance and their Run Your Way campaign, and we've been talking about what that means, essentially celebrating runners of all different abilities, paces, shapes, sizes, and reasons for running, and there is no right or wrong way to run.
Yeah, and you said you wanted to celebrate the 2024 TCS London Marathon as your fifth marathon, as a celebration of your own running journey and experience. Did you actually manage that?
I think I did, you know. I mean, I can't say you're going to love every single minute of 26.2 miles, but I partied my way around the streets of London and I just loved seeing everyone out there. Each person was out running for a different reason, putting one foot in front of the other, getting it done. And I felt so proud of both myself and everyone else on the finish line.
And the crowd?
Absolutely incredible. The London crowds are on a different level. I thought the best party I was going to go to was running around the streets of Dublin with New Balance, but no, London brought it.
Amazing. I think we all felt the community across the weekend at the Running Channel, whether like you as a runner out on the course, or I was in mile 27 or pop-up where I got to see so many runners, the people who are supporting the runners on the course, the runners who had achieved their goals, some runners who hadn't achieved their goals as well, but everyone was happy to kind of celebrate together as runners. And we and mile 27, you in your marathon journey, had all been supported by New Balance. So if you want to check out New Balance's running range to help you through all your running training, then check out the link in the show notes.